Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Semi-Professional Academic Podcast. As always, I'm your host with the most uggos in my DMs, Jacob Watts. Joining me today is the hilarious, super kind, super talented Camille Pushman, everybody.
Oh, the crowd is cheering. I can hear them snapping.
Yeah, you know, one of these days when we actually have a budget, I'm going to go back and add sound effects, but we're broke, so that's not happening for a minute.
Well, here, just take this sound bite now.
Just take the sound bite.
Yeah, snapping.
I couldn't see you snapping, so I just thought you were getting like really close to the camera for nothing.
I was like, what did she do?
Oh, but Camille, how are you?
I'm good. I'm as good as you can be in what you ask for when you're in the heat of grad school, but I'm sure you completely understand that.
I have a paper due tomorrow that I haven't even started yet. So, like, you know, thriving.
Oh, yeah. I am in a reading class right now where there's a lot of reading involved, and then you have to, like, write a response for it. And I feel like, I don't know if you would agree with this, but one of the first skills you gain in grad school is the ability to read scientific papers. It, like, just shocking speeds when there is a deadline approaching.
Oh, yeah. In my master's, because like having ADD also helps. So like I would push everything off to the last minute. So then I have just like the dopamine rush to like do it. And it's like, it's otherworldly. And I was like, wow, you know, if I just like applied this normally, I'd probably be a really good student.
That's not how the ADD monster works. You don't get to pick and choose. They pick and choose you.
Yeah. It's like the party goblin theory, you know? Like, it's like that, having the ADD monster means putting things off, and it's not even your fault.
Well, and my favorite times with the ADD monster are when I decide to, like, reorganize my furniture or renovate my housing. Like, I want to paint our kitchen right now, and so I went to Lowe's and I bought the paint, and I haven't started, but there is tape on half of the kitchen, because those projects always start with such good intentions and then they never get done. But it's a fun time while it lasts, you know.
Oh yeah, if my intentions had achievements, I would have like a PhD, a Nobel Prize, an Olympics medal, like the whole thing. But no, in short, grad school's rough.
Yeah, I love it. Love to hate it. Love it, though.
That's such like a response that like you're being true, and then like your advisor walks in and be like, but I love it though.
yeah. No, really, I'm so grateful to be here. And then like as they turn the corner, a single tear falls down your cheek.
Yeah, you'd be like, I'm having such a good time. I need to be here so bad.
Yes. You sure you don't want me to do anything else? We need more RNA extractions done right now. Get right on it. I have so much free time.
Yeah, you know, like I slept yesterday.
Who needs sleep anyways?
Oh my goodness. Before we get into all that though, like,
sorry.
No, that is not on you. Like, as you know, and anyone else who's ever watched the show, I have a talent for just not doing anything, but also not staying on course. So
you're just too personable.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. You know what? You're going to be like I'm going to hire you as my rebrander for everything.
Listen, I didn't get a marketing degree. Maybe choose wisely on that one, but I won't say no.
You know, marketing. But Camille, would you mind just giving our audience a little bit of background information about yourself, where you're from, what you're doing, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So my name is Camille. I am from Indiana. So, you know, the mid of the Midwest, the worst of the worst. So I'm from Northern Indiana. Originally, I went to a really small school for a lot of my childhood, like a graduating class of 45 in high school. But I ended up graduating from like a really huge high school in a really affluent area. So going to college was at the same time, like really similar to what I was used to and really different. But I went to college at IU which is like a big state school in Indiana. And I was really fortunate as a first gen student to get some generous scholarships. So that's how I found myself there. And I thought that I wanted to be a doctor. I was pre-med. I'm sure plenty of people know the story. Canon event, you can't interfere. I am not a doctor, a medical doctor. I'm not in med school. Just spoiler alert. But my time at IU, I really got into research and kind of discovered what I loved about science. And so I graduated this past May of 2023 with my bachelor's in biology. And now I'm in a PhD program, and I actually chose to stay at Indiana University Bloomington. And so I'm a first year in the PhD student, or first year in the PhD program there.
Honestly, the first year in the PhD student is such a vibe.
Can you tell I'm sleep deprived? It's really not that bad, but
I mean, like, I feel like most PhD students are sleep deprived, and then like, but there's like a couple that are like, oh, I go to bed at 9 every night. I'm like,
well, see, I like to think that I'm the responsible kind that goes to bed at 9 every night, but I do normally choose to go to bed at 9 every night regardless of whether the tasks are completed, so there's a balance.
Okay, see, now that that is so real. I'm talking about the people who like are able to get everything done, go to bed at 9, wake up at 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so actually what really got me interested in research was this research program my freshman year at IU. It's called the Assure program. And it's almost like a mini grad school is the best way I can describe it, where like you design your own research and you carry it out and you can like rewrite a thesis on it and you can present it. And one of my research partners, his name was Matt. Matt, if you're ever listening to this, I love you so much. I want to be Matt when I grow up. I would go to the bus stop and I would see him running around IU's football stadium at like the crack of dawn, and he just gets everything done, and he's so smart, and he's in medical school now. And you know, I want to be Matt when I grow up.
I also want to be Matt when I grow up, because like, dang, I'm honestly lucky if I make it into lab before 9:30 on most days.
I feel like making it to lab before 9:30 is an accomplishment, and the expectation that we should be there before 9 was perpetuated by the old white men that also created significant figures, and it's all arbitrary, really.
Yeah. Today, speaking of, and this, I'm not going to say who it was, because he's really not like he's not that kind of white man, and he's not old, but we were doing like a lab practical exercise thing, and we were like adjusting like alpha values to see how that changes growth, and only people who do like STEM will be listening to this. So, like, everyone's gonna like zone out here in a few seconds, but like, pay attention, guys. Like, there's a joke coming, I promise. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, if we like increase this, it affects this, this, and this. And then he goes, great. Now, what do you think will happen if we decrease it? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, you're asking for too much.
Yeah. And he goes, no, like, think about it. And I was just like, I don't know. And
that's the best response you could give.
Oh, I wasn't even done.
But that's like so sassy. That would have been enough for me. I would have lost it if I was like sitting in the classroom with you and you were like, I think, I don't know. Like, I would not have been able to contain myself.
And then he goes, no, think about it intuitively. And I was like, I don't think about anything intuitively. Like, I have like nothing going on in here, just vibes. And honestly, that cleared the room. Like, it was like good. I was like, oh, thank God.
Well, I feel like that's one of those like clearing the rooms where it's not like everybody's intention. They all relax because they're like, me too. I feel that.
No, like I got the professor laughing though, and I was just like, oh yes. Personality hire secured. No, I say that as if I'm not like actively worrying that I'm horrible and like trying my best 24/7.
I feel like the best people are always like you would never know. Like, I would never guess that you're internalizing everything, but the people who think about it are the ones that are gonna like take the most care and be the best people outwardly. So I feel like it's a good thing.
Like, this is not a read. I feel like that's about you though, because like you have like this, like the way you like carry yourself is like so humble and like collaborative, and just honestly you have like this like confidence about yourself, but like not in like a overly confident way, like you know what you're doing, but at the same time you're very aware of the things that you don't, and you actively try to do what you know you can to help. And like I just think that's like very impressive about you.
You're making me blush. Thank you. That means so much. I try to be confident in the things I know without being overconfident, which I think is a line that everybody toes, especially in academia, of, you know, you want to be credible, and like just because you have a degree doesn't mean you know everything, but you know enough to know something. Like, you know, I think back to all the things that I've learned since beginning my experience as an undergrad, even in college, and like I learned some stuff and it was valuable, and I do know some things, but that doesn't mean I know everything.
Honestly, very much that. Very much that. And speaking of, you touched on something so familiar, and I don't want to be weird, but there's like a lot of similarities in like our stories. And like if anyone's hear me, like they know like I talk about myself all the time. It's a problem. Like I am obsessed with me. And I feel like everyone should be like obsessed with themselves. Cause like this is like going on with a little soapbox here. I feel like everyone should be their own favorite person, because you know everything you go through, you know how hard it work, you know how everything you overcome, you know how many times you don't choose violence. Not near enough people.
Oh, Lord.
Respect.
Only Lord knows how many times I don't choose violence.
I know. Same. And I don't know. I feel like everyone should be obsessed with themselves. Like me, I love me so much. Like I could walk into a room and I am like, oh my gosh, I'm amazing. And like, not in a sense like I feel like I'm better than everybody, but like I don't know, like I don't know if like you can relate to this, but like I just really got sick and tired of, like, especially in academia, sometimes accidentally, sometimes purposefully establishes your value based on your achievements, but then also you gotta recognize that those achievements are awarded by people already in power with privilege. So like,
absolutely.
So I don't know, I just feel like, wow, I'm really asking like the tough question, like a really tough question right off the bat. Like I did not see where this is going, but I don't know. Like, Camille, like, what do you think about that?
I mean, I think absolutely. And I know I kind of mentioned earlier, like I am a first generation student. And so coming to college, like there is so much information I think it goes back a lot to like privilege too. And like you say, the people who are giving out those awards, like if you're in the club, you're in the club already in some capacity, you have some sort of connection or intel or inside information. And I remember like one of my first discussion sections I was in college, some instructor that she was a lecturer, and she ended up being one of my favorite and like best mentors. She's made such an impact in my life, but she was just talking about where she got her master's and her bachelor's and her PhD. And I remember raising my hand and just like asking, like, what's the difference between those? Like, how long did it take to get those? Like, what is the succession? Does a master's come before a PhD? I just genuinely had no idea. And I think that there's something in academia, this is something too, like there's so much culture and social knowledge that you need to have to succeed that you don't have unless you have that privilege. And it is a privilege, and it's really hard not only to get it but to stay on top of it. And yeah, I guess I'm starting to ramble. I don't really know where I'm going with it other than that I totally agree, and that I think that it is a privilege. And now that I have the privilege to, you know, be a grad student and find my way in academia, it's so important to me to make sure that that information is accessible to other people, because sometimes it, you know, I'm sure that you agree, it feels like you have to search so hard to find the answers to the simplest questions for what you're looking for. And even then, to act upon it, you have to do it in a certain way. Otherwise, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And totally. And I just like, my mom was a first gen student, and she literally talked about a lot of things that you brought up with just like all these almost like unwritten rules that like no one tells you, but you're expected to follow at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful to have her because she helped guide me like to my bachelor's and like my master's, because she did her master's as well. But like my PhD, like I was like entirely on my own. And I mean, you've met me before. You know, like, I'm not subtle. I've never been subtle a day in my life. So, and we'll give you guys a little bit of, like, insider info now that, like, we're in the club. like, junior members, maybe. For PhD programs, a lot of programs, you have to reach out to the PI or, like, the professor running the lab of, like, whose lab you want to join, like, in the summer before applications start. So they can get to know you. So then you can, like, help vouch for your interview. I didn't know that. I just, like, kind of, like, on a vibe did that. And somehow, somehow I guessed correctly of what I'm supposed to do, which, like, never happens. And, you know, like, they typically tell you, be like, oh, hello, Dr. So-and-so. I was reading XYZ papers. And, like, that's how you do this. And you're like, I'm very interested. And that's not what I did at all. I was just like, hey, I saw your lab. It's really I dig the vibe. Can we talk about me potentially doing a PhD in your lab? Da, da, da. And then every time I met with them, I'd be like, I think what you do is really fucking cool. Like, let me go. And I was just like, this is so... Now upon looking back on it, I was like, wow, I was like really unhinged. Like, just like how...
Mean, but that's just it, is you knew the right thing to do. And I think that's part of, like, even if you know what to do, you have to do it in the right way of you were new to schedule the meeting and to have the meeting, but there's still the unwritten rule of, you know, what are we supposed to talk about in this meeting? What kinds of questions could they ask me? Because at the end of the day, it really is like an interview. And, you know, I think it's also, it's not just a privilege to know to do that or to know how to go about that interview, but also I spent so much time doing those preliminary interviews with PIs, and, you know, half of them I didn't even end up applying, which wasn't, you know, a bad thing. It was just that maybe I realized that their research didn't quite align or that that wouldn't be somewhere that I'd be interested in living. But, you know, I spent probably at least 5 hours a week during that period over the summer and the fall, whether it was working on applications or being actively in interviews with people or searching out PIs and reading their work and, you know, doing my research on what they do before that interview. And not everybody has that time or those resources. And if you're not actively enrolled in a university and you want to read their research papers and they're not open access, you know, like, what are you supposed to do?
Literally. And that's something, like, I really, like, didn't take into consideration because I had been in school, like, the whole time. Like, I went straight from my bachelor's to my master's to my PhD. And, like, I didn't even think about that because, like, for those of you who don't know, like, a lot of journals have, like, a paywall, so you can't access a lot of papers. But if you're in an institution and you have, like, a school email, like, for example, I'm at UK, so it's, like, jacobwatts@uky.edu, like, feel free to hack me, I guess. But, like, we have deals with, like, certain journals, so, like, we can get to view them, like, through the, like, campus library and all that stuff. And if you don't, like, there's just, like, a lot of barriers that I think a lot of people don't think about.
Yeah.
I think you really hit the nail on the head with that.
I think, too, like, it's, and I hate repeatedly using the word privilege like this, because I think it has this connotation to it that I'm not trying to use in this way, but I think that it is the most fitting word that, you know, it is a privilege to not have to think about those things. So why would you? And, you know, I don't expect those people to unless they have to, because, you know, that wasn't something that I personally had to experience, because I also went straight from undergrad to grad school. But, you know, there are things like that that when I realized that other people didn't have to consider those things, or, like, you know, I didn't really start thinking about what I wanted to do besides becoming a doctor until after I got to college. And some people didn't have to do the legwork of researching careers, for example. And that's not something that I would wish upon them. I don't want them to have to put in the amount of effort and energy that I did. But, like, it is something to recognize that it is a privilege to not have to do that.
Right. And I feel like society's gotten, especially, like, white people in society have gotten really scared of using the P word of that is privilege. And I want people to know, like, when that word is thrown out, that's not saying that, like, this is easy. It's just, like, there's obstacles you didn't have to jump through.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Again, granted, as a white man, even though I'm gay and I have experienced homophobia in academia, that's a whole other episode. But, like, there's a lot of privilege in that. And I don't think that, like, dismisses anything that people go through in academia, because this shit is hard. Like, I've I will say that till the day I die, this shit's hard. But acknowledging privilege doesn't take away from anything that you've done. And I think that, like, I don't know. I don't get why people are scared of that. But, you know.
Yeah, I guess, like, sorry if you hear my cats meowing. Also, though, like, leveling the playing field, I don't think would really decrease the people with the privileges ability to achieve. It would just make it so more people can achieve and, you know, put the spotlight on more people. Because even, you know, in grad school and what I've learned going to conferences and things now is how interconnected your field is. So I'm sure this is true no matter what field you're in, but, you know, in the field of evolution, apparently everybody knows everybody. And, you know, like I went to a conference last summer and I'd be talking to somebody like, oh yeah, that's so-and-so, they're married to this person who, and you know, like they were postdocs in this lab together. And, you know, everybody really does know everybody, which just, it's so clear that there is, you know, if you're in the club, you're in the club. And if not, you got to figure out a way to get there.
Yeah. This is going to sound weird, but it's like almost fun, like not being in the club, because like there's like this air of mysteriousness around us. Because I mean, like, oh yeah, like so and so connected like 6 degrees removed from this person. So I don't know. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, granted, that might just be like I don't have the connections, but I don't know.
I don't either.
I mean, okay, this is like some little story. This is like some story about like how Camille and I first met. So like we were on the we were on the grad interview circuit, and being a born Hoosier myself, like I obviously applied to IU, got an interview, and then me, Camille, and some other students were like having dinner one night, and they were asking us like where we're interviewing from, like what, like whose lab we're trying to get into. And then Camille and I were interviewing for the same lab, which I think was just so funny, because like it was just such, and I didn't know,
what a quinky dink.
And then I was like, oh my gosh, like what attracted like you to the lab, like, you know, just like making like, because I don't know how to like engage in normal conversation, so I'd just be saying stuff. And he was like, oh well, like he was like my advisor. And I was just like, oh cool. Fun. So you did know somebody, is what I'm hearing.
That is true.
But no, it was so fun getting to hang out with you like at that grad weekend, like honestly.
Oh yeah, I mean, think like all the people at that grad weekend, and I think this is true of like most of the places that I interviewed, but especially there, it was just so refreshing. And everybody, because maybe it was just that they're selecting for such similar people, but I don't know, I feel like there was a good diversity of people, especially at IU's recruitment, that it just was nice to vibe with people and get to know them, and like you and the other students that we were interviewing with, and usually they have activities. And for anybody who hasn't gone through this process, it's kind of crazy how much they do to recruit grad students. They like wine and dine you, like you have special events, and it's pretty exhausting. And you interview and whatever, like it's a serious event, but also they take you to dinner and you get free food and they pay for your hotel usually. So like, it's really not that bad of a gig. And you get to interact with some really great people. And I mean, like you and people I've met at other grad recruitment weekends too, are like some of what I would consider my closest colleagues now.
Oh, same. Yeah. And I have to say, it was like so, it was honestly so refreshing, because typically in these spaces, like a lot of times there's like competition, like between everybody, like, and everyone's like on ease, and I'm just not that kind of person. Like, so I was just like, oh my gosh, girl, like what's going on? Like, how was like the interviews today? Are we feeling good or whatever? And then like after like interviews, like we went to like a bar like that night in Bloomington.
Yes.
I was just like, this is exactly what I think grads interview should be.
Yes. Well, and I think too, like I, and maybe this is just like I'm a very everything will work out person, you know, and maybe that's just what I have to tell myself, because I say that, but I'm also a very anxious person. So take this with a grain of salt, but I, you know, I try to believe that everything works out for a reason. And so, you know, maybe if, you know, I didn't get offered a position at a lab, which the institution you're at right now actually was my rejection that I got during the admissions process.
Oh my gosh, your institution was my rejection.
Yeah. So just to let you know, if that makes you feel better.
Why would that make me feel better, girl? Like,
I don't know. It makes you feel good about your achievements, I guess.
What did we just talk about?
That's true. I guess though, like, through that process too, thinking of it as less competing against these people for like who's the best person is going to win the spot, but really I feel like who ends up in those spots is just a matter of like maybe they're a better fit for this really weird reason. It doesn't mean that they're a better person or a better scientist than you, and you know, maybe your research interest just didn't quite align, but it's not that there's something wrong with you, and it's not that you're not a good person or a good scientist, or you know, just being able to have that affirmation. I think this goes back to what you're talking about of like, you have to be your own favorite person. You have to know deep down that you are a good person and a good applicant, and you're deserving of, you know, even interviewing there. And just because you don't get that position in any situation doesn't change those things.
Exactly. And I will be fully honest though, like, it never feels good to get rejected. Like, you're never like, oh my gosh, they said no, party. Like, deep down, you want to get all the acceptances, but like, it goes like, mm-hmm. back to what you said. Like, it's not a rejection, it's a redirection.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And I will say though, like, it would have been so fun to come in with like someone that I knew like at the same time into a lab. Cause like there's like 3-year difference between me and like the second youngest grad student in my lab. So like, there's mm-hmm. like a little bit of lack there. And I'm just like, I'm dying over here. And they're like, okay. Like, they're not that, but like, you know, like they already passed like their qual. So like, they're like full-time research now. So like,
mm-hmm.
it's been a minute since they've balanced like actual and research all at the same time.
No, well, we were so close this time, the stars didn't align that we're not lab besties right now. But if you do a postdoc, we can coordinate that. We'll be lab besties next time, and we'll go through it together.
Oh my gosh, that'd be so iconic. We should pretend that we don't know each other, and then that way we just
okay. I don't know if I could do that. I'm such a bad liar.
It's not lying, it's acting. Think about just telling truths from alternate realities.
Oh, I can do that.
Yeah. So like, no, because then like we'll join the lab together and be like, oh my gosh, like I'm Jacob. It's so nice to meet you, da-da. And then like in a week become lab besties, and they're just like, oh my gosh, like they are like just like so fun. And then they'll be like, they're just like dynamic. Little do we know that we planned this like years
in advance.
Like the Taylor Swift of it all. but no, I like that plan. We should do that.
Yeah, I'll set a reminder now, like 5 years, remind me.
Set a reminder when we're defending. I was like, all right, like bestie, like we're defending, where we're applying. Like,
yeah, yeah. Who's accepting 2 postdocs at the same time? ?
What we need to do is we need to join like a super lab situation where there's like 2 labs in the same space, and then apply to like the other ones.
That would be smart. Well, there's enough of it too. I didn't realize until like pretty recently, within like the last year, how many PIs in, at least in STEM, but I assume this is similar in like all of academia, are married to each other. You just don't know because they don't share the same last name. Maybe this is just an IU thing. You look a little
okay. No, because like that's true. Because did you hear about, do you know about like the spousal hire like rule thing?
I guess I know about spousal hires in general, but I don't know what specific rule you're referring to. So maybe.
Like, there's a professor at UK who got recruited to come, and she was like, well, my husband also has a PhD and he teaches, like, can you make a position for him? And like, most of the time, like the department will like take it to the college to like make that happen and then like hire both mm-hmm. of them.
I guess, yeah, I knew that that was a normal thing. I think the lab that I'm in right now actually was meant to be for like a main PI and the spousal hire that came along. And so the lab next to us is like really huge and has a bunch of rooms. And then our joined lab is much smaller because we were like originally the less important spouse. That's what I've been told.
Oh, but I liked that lab though. Like, I visited.
Lots of windows. That was one thing anywhere that I visited that like the lab had to have windows.
Honestly, I love me a window.
There was one place that I interviewed that their lab was technically like in a basement, and so there were no windows. And I was talking to one of the grad students, and I was like, "So, like, do you get to go outside often? Like, how do you manage that?" And she was like, "Sometimes I go a little stir crazy, but then I just, you know, take a walk around the building and go back into darkness, basically." And I was like, "Oh, that's depressing."
Oh my gosh. Oh, girl, I gotta ask, like, as a fellow pre-med turned researcher, what was like the defining point in like your transition? Like, yeah, like medical school is just not what I want to do right now.
It was a combination of like 2 to 3 small events. So first, chemistry was hard.
Can't interfere. That's a canon event.
I was taking like chemistry and math at the same time, and everything was harder than I expected because I was somebody who never had to try in high school. And so I went to the academic advisor and I was like, "I don't really know what to do. I don't know which class to drop. I'm really stressed. Like, you know, what do I do?" And she just said, "Well, if you think you're stressed now, you should reconsider medical school. Just think about how stressed you'll be then." And in the moment, I was really upset with her. But looking back, that was the truth that I really needed to hear. And she was right.
Oh, that's, oh my gosh. Okay, so that.
Yeah, so that was the seed of doubt.
Yeah, that was the seed of doubt. Okay, now where's like.
And then so the Assure program I was in, I was doing research. And we were actually working with crickets. And at first I was like, "Ew, gross, disgusting." And then I was like, "Actually, these are kind of cool," because I've kind of always been a bug nerd. So I started to get more confident in the idea that like people could be successful and have careers outside of being just a doctor or a lawyer, because, you know, coming from a family where nobody had higher education, that was, you know, the best and most successful you could be is to be a doctor or a lawyer. Like, those are the end of the list, 2 options. Have fun, go make it happen. And then, so what actually like changed my mind, I was starting to get comfortable, like these seeds were being planted. And I was in my introductory biology class, and one of my instructors, the last week of class, first semester, she had the 100 slides of gloom and doom, is what she called it. It was about climate change. Mm-hmm. And I had this epiphany of, if I'm not doing something about this, then what am I doing with my life? Which quickly shifted towards realizing that the more I learned about climate change, the more depressed I got. So in the end, it just ended up being a screw it. I'm just going to study whatever I want and whatever I think's cool and do that with my life, because I don't have to be a doctor to be successful, and bugs are cool.
Slay, honestly. I wish I had the realization sooner. Like, I took the MCAT. I was that deep into it.
That costs money, Jacob.
Oh, and applying to grad school is free.
I mean, fair point. I have no comeback.
No, I was grateful though. Like, I had a teeny tiny bit of like TikTok clout, and like I sold merch. I know it's like very embarrassing, but that merch sales.
I have to get. Do you have a sticker?
Oh my gosh, I have a sticker of the show now.
Oh,
yeah. I'll send you some. Don't worry.
Thank you.
No, but yeah. So I sold a t-shirt with this logo that Maddie Foley, who was a guest on the show, designed, and then Holden August edited it, and then my friend Shelby was in charge of making and distributing the merch, and it was Watts the Tea t-shirt.
That's amazing.
I know, honestly, like,
you should trademark that or copyright it, whatever it is.
What makes you think I have it?
Money.
Yeah.
You are a grad student.
No, but I made enough of those merch sales to pay for all my applications to, like, middle school, school and grad school.
Oh, snaps.
Oh, thank you. You know, like, so as cringy as TikTok is, those videos I made back in 2021 really popped off. They did their thing.
Congratulations. That's like, that is a big accomplishment to say that you did that. And it takes courage to like put yourself out online, like even the podcast thing. like, even though your face isn't what's being posted, it takes courage to put your voice and your opinions and yourself out there. And not everybody can do it successfully either.
Case in point, I'm not doing it successfully either.
Yes, you are.
I know no one can see me, but every time, but like while I'm on the screen with Camille, I'm looking deadpan off as if there's like a camera, like Modern Family, just like making eye contact with an imaginary camera, like breaking the fourth wall. Like, can you believe this? Like, it's something I do all the time. I'm concerned. Someone told me it's a sign of mental illness, and I'm like, well.
I feel like, at least for me, we would have had to have overlooked a few more signs before we got to that one. Like the deadpanning into the camera was the first thing that tipped you off.
Oh wow. Oh. Oh, that's funny. That's so funny.
Like I said, I'm an open book, maybe a little bit too open.
Oh wow. She, for those who didn't catch that, Camille just called me a mentally ill bitch, honestly. Wait.
I was saying that about myself, not you. Oh my gosh, you think I just insulted you?
No. Fantastic. I love that so much.
It's only funny because I said I was overlooking my own problems. But you know what? If it's about both of us, that's okay too. But it's not, if it is a you thing, it's not just you. We're in this together.
I mean, who goes into academia that's mentally well quickly?
That is like a running joke in my cohort that people will say things and they'll be like, well, you know, they have to essentially, like, somebody would have to be pretty mentally ill to do that. And I just like constantly am saying, like, yeah, that's not the reason why any of us got here. Like, none of us are here because we're mentally stable and make sound choices. Haven't you seen the Simpsons comic or like the meme that's like, Bart has a ponytail and he's like, look, I'm a grad student, I made $600 last year. Like,
I love that. And Marge is like, Bart, don't make fun of grad students, they just make bad life choices.
Yes.
And I was like, I feel seen and called out at the same time. Oh no, like, girl, can we talk about this grad stipend for like a hot second? Because in my master's, girl, and like I've said this, I've talked about this all the time on the show because this is ridiculous. My master's before taxes got taken out because like we did not get our stipends like tax exempt. We made $950 a month. Yeah, $950 a month.
You literally can't live off that.
No, I know. And like we didn't get housing, we didn't get any of this. And we also had like fees like every semester, like probably about like.
You paid your own fees too?
Yeah, none of them were waived in my master's. And like we, like it was probably about like $500 to $1,000 a semester of fees.
So was that like a big thing that you took into consideration when you were doing your PhD interviews? Or were you just kind of like, well, it can't get any worse?
Girl, which one do you think I went with? The latter, because like, and like on top of that, like you had to like pay rent. So like I was lucky enough that the university I was at had graduate housing that was only like about $500 a month. So
only over half of your stipend before taxes and fees.
Okay, girl, I didn't say I was super grateful.
Listen, that wasn't a dig on you. That was a dig on them.
No, I know. And then I had a car payment at the time, so like $165-$180 to that. Grateful I got insurance through the school and I was still on my parents' insurance, and my utilities and water and all that was paid for by the school. So like at least I got that. So the challenge was making about $200 last for gas, food, and entertainment per month.
I want to know. Because let's say that you did make it work for gas and the food. How do you find entertainment in your remaining $10?
Well, I started this show and
I guess that makes sense.
So I started the show, and I was just like, one of the reasons that it inspired the show was how shitty this pay was. And I was just like, no one talks about this. And here we are.
I need to tell everyone.
I need to tell everyone. Dragged them through the mud. And then I won't. And then that my master's was a mess. I mean, like, there was a strike. My professor ghosted me for a hot second. It caught on. It flooded. There was an HVAC project. I had to do DNA extractions in a closet. I said it before, but I'll say it again. A professor strike that pushed back my defense of my thesis. And horrible children that like robbed the school and like messed up lab space and stuff. And also during a pandemic, I was going there, and a HVAC project that like kicked us out of the lab for like a year and a half of my 2-year program.
Oh my gosh. I would not have finished. I would like the fact that you pulled that off, and it's not like, here are all these awful experiences that I went through, and like, yeah, I left. You're like, no, I finished it. You're like, I was doing my extractions in a closet and envisioning my degree the entire time, and I made it. Maybe that's the spite we were talking about earlier.
If you need spite, I am your dude. Like, I got you. So, yeah. And I know I talk about it a lot, but like, that was a lot. That was a lot for 2 years.
Yes. That's a lot for 5 years. That's a lot for a lifetime.
And then on top of that, I couldn't get my thesis published either. So like, that was so depressing. Like, it's published in like the school, like archive and paper and journals.
But like, so hard for that. Well, the fact that you went through all of that and you were like, you know what sounds nice? Another 5 years or so is really admirable.
Or mentally ill. Take your pick.
I choose both. I have both. I can't get rid of one of them. So
it's a BOGO deal, you know? It'll be like,
you really are losing money to not take both.
And losing money to take both.
It's lose-lose for everyone involved except the administration.
Don't even get me started. But switching gears, we kind of like hinted at it a little bit, but how does it feel like when you had all these acceptances coming in to do your PhD? Like, what was going through your mind of like making that kind of like decision, if you don't mind telling us?
Yeah. So many things, honestly. What I was thinking completely changed from the beginning of the application and interview process to the end. Actually, when I applied to IU originally, I mean, I was like, oh yeah, this could be equally likely as everywhere else. And then there was a period where I was actually like, oh, I could not envision myself going there at all, because there was this other university that I thought was going to be the best, you know, greatest. I was so excited to go there. And then I actually visited and I realized that I would not want to be there. That was just like, kind of, I did a 180 and had to reevaluate everything. And the acceptances coming in was really nice, but then having to make a decision was so difficult. And because everybody was so nice, and you did, like, all the people at the recruitment weekends are nice, all the students that are hosting you are amazing, and you essentially are making like all these friends professionally and a little bit like personally, because you're talking to them about this process and their experiences. And then so to have the admission was really nice and kind of like affirming that you are doing the right thing. But then to make the decision, or like say no to, because you can only say yes to one, right? Like, you can't say yes to everybody.
So could you imagine? Could you imagine be like, this day I'm going to Kentucky, this day I'll be at IU, this day I'll be in like Cambodia, like,
yeah. Honestly, no, nobody contact me on, you can only contact me on Tuesday. That's my UK day.
That's my UK day.
I don't know, but yeah, so I guess I don't even know if that answered your question, but I did a 180 on what I thought I wanted, and it was really nice to have the admissions come in, but it was really difficult at the end of the day to make the choice, because it's not just the institution, it's all the people behind the admission and the offer that you have to consider.
Yeah.
And yourself.
Yeah, true. And that's another one of the reasons why I chose UK, partly because it's the only place that said yes. But I just really connected with my PI, and I mean, like, I love Lexington, and I just, and I have like friends who are going to like UK for medical school. Shout out, you guys don't listen to this show. That's fine.
They don't need it. They're above us. They passed Orgo.
I passed Orgo with a B minus. Well,
that's better than I did.
Okay, girl, I've talked about this before, but I'm going to talk about it for like a hot second, I promise, and I'll get back to my main point. I got a B minus the first semester. I got a C the second semester. Retook the second semester OChem like during the pandemic, and then got a B plus. And then my professor did not feel comfortable writing a letter of recommendation speaking to like my hard work and growth. I was like,
why not? That takes so much hard work and growth.
I literally improved over a letter grade.
You know, if for anybody who hasn't taken OChem or has never had to like retake a class, to put that into perspective, I actually took organic chemistry over the summer with like one of our flagship school, like one of the sister schools of IEPUI, and I got a C minus and barely passed. And then I was going to go on to Orgo 2 at IU, but I realized that I didn't feel like I learned much. So I retook it. And even retaking it the second time, I only got a C plus. Like, I was back. I mean, it's growth, but like taking it back to back, and it was basically the exact same course. And like, you got, not only did you jump a letter grade, but you got a B plus. I could have taken, technically, that was my third time taking the class, because I got a week in the one semester and dropped it.
Mood.
So like that does speak testaments to like growth and hard work and perseverance, and the fact that, because that's the other thing with applications and thinking about privilege, recommendation letters, hello, like academia selects for all these extroverted people that make all these connections. And while I think that like sometimes that can be valuable, if you have like a really introverted person that maybe isn't getting to know the professor really well, they're just performing well, they're being counted against.
Yeah, literally. And I want to take a minute to speak to like your hard work and like perseverance, because like it was very impressive to me when I was interviewing at IU for this position in this lab, which Camille was like a student like researcher at the time. In the middle of interviews, when she had an off break, she was like doing like lab work and like all this thing. And I was just like, okay, like I know it wasn't a competition, but in that moment I knew, I was like, oh, I lost this.
No. Lost.
Like, no, girl, it's fine. Like, I mean, I also, this was so funny to me, because afterwards, like in the like application process, like I was talking to Camille, because we had like the exact same like interviewing lineup. And I was like, wasn't like that question like ridiculous? And then Camille was like, I didn't get asked that question. I was like, you'd be lucky. That was a fucking stupid question.
That's like, I don't know. If I was a professor, I would have like five questions that I ask everyone, because that's what's fair. But they really hit everybody with different ones, and somehow they were all awful and hard.
For the question in general, and that I got asked at 7 o'clock in the fucking morning, which that should have been a crime, and like in full interview attire at 7 a.m. they made us get there. We should have sued. No, I'm kidding, but not kidding.
No, we paid them to be there.
That was, we were clowns in that moment for that. But anyways I got asked, what do you think is missing from science's understanding of evolution, ecology, and behavior?
How did you answer that?
I said, I need a fucking minute. I didn't say fucking. I was like, oh, let me think on that for a minute. And then he started.
You got some coffee.
And he started opening and responding to emails like while I was sitting there. And I was like,
what?
Yeah.
That's so disrespectful.
Dude, I like no shit talking. And I don't know how to say this without sounding catty because I didn't get in. It was made very clear that I was not getting a spot at IU. But
I'm so sorry. But also, it doesn't matter. Like, even if you're a PI and you're sitting there and let's say, like, in some universe, you know that the student sitting in front of you already is not getting in. You still treat them with respect. They're a person. They are a scientist, an aspiring scientist. And let's say maybe the reason that they're not getting in is because they just have like more to learn. But like, why wouldn't you help them achieve that instead of like putting them down and making them feel, I don't know, like the email thing. I don't know who that was. Maybe we'll name drop off the record.
Subscribe.
But like, that grinds my gears.
Subscribe to the Patreon to no, okay. So I answered, I was like, you know, I just really think that we're not taking into a whole perspective of like how ecological interactions affect behavior because of or evolution. Because like of course we can track like changes in behavior in species, but we really haven't taken into account to like how species one in area A is on like this time point. And is in similar conditions to this species in area B, but this species is like five is like has gone through this similar timeline of evolution with like similar traits and behaviors, but is also adding this. Like, what's that missing factor? And just kind of like more using like not only furthering our understanding by fully understanding all of like ecological interactions in comparison of biology, evolution, ecology, and behavior. Which, for not having an answer prepared, I thought that was, like, okay.
No, I think that that's a good response. And also, like, it's 7 in the morning. And, I don't know, like, as a PI, too, like, you know whoever you're interviewing is nervous. And, like, you have to just consider, even if you didn't give a great answer, that anxiety and nerves is going to play a huge part in how everybody performs in their interviews. You just have to, like, take that into incorporation, or, like, incorporate that into your understanding of who they are as a person.
Yeah, no, it was so funny to me because I was his first interview of the day, and then I answered that question, and I again obsessed to myself, thought, oh my gosh, I nailed this, that was such a good answer, like I was so proud of myself for that answer. And he goes, okay, and then moves on to the next one. I was like,
I feel like I remember who this was now.
It's not who you think.
Okay.
And then I got interviewed by someone who had like literally spent years working in Wolbachia. And like, I made the mistake of letting them know I was doing a master's project that involved Wolbachia. So
you're like, I'm trying to move on from Wolbachia. Please. No.
Yeah. So like, he like ripped it to shreds. Cause like, I didn't, cause he was like, what thing are you doing? I was like, okay, I didn't even know what. Because I was working with gall wasps. I was like, I didn't even know what gall wasps or Wolbachia was a year ago. I'm just like looking to see if it's present and in what species and how prevalent. I don't give a shit.
One thing that I think in academia is just like so rampant that nobody really acknowledges is, yes, it does take a lot of hard work to like be in a tenure track position and it's really competitive. But there's this, words are hard. Pretentious, maybe, is the word I'm looking for, or
build.
Yeah, like just people believing that they're above or like on a power trip because you're a PI. And I don't know, I think there's like a baseline human level respect that you should have for people. And I think that some PIs definitely like take advantage of the fact that they know that they're in a power position, and it's just like evident in how they interact with people and how they treat them.
Yeah, I'm very grateful that like the advisor I have now is not like that way at all, and she creates like such a healthy atmosphere, and I love that so much. Yes.
But that's what, there are good ones too, and like I would say the same for my advisor. Like there are, you know, mentors that I've had that were great, but also there are some real stink bombs out there that like just want to ruin the fun for everyone.
I know, like we could have such a good time if y'all didn't ruin it.
I know there were like, and I try to respect like they come from different backgrounds, but I also know that there are some of them that are just kind of like out of touch with reality, I think, because they spend so much time in their science that they don't know how to be a person. And they almost like look down on people for not just their career being their entire personality. And I guess maybe like as the person who during the breaks on my interviews was doing science, even like, I enjoy what I do, but you know what? I also enjoy spending time with my cats and like doing arts and crafts. And like, I have things outside of science that make me a holistic person. And just because you choose to like, and again, that's not a bad thing if you want your career to be your whole life, but that doesn't make you better than anybody else.
Yeah. Like go touch grass, y'all. Like for real.
Yes.
And
just bring them in like a wheatgrass plant and be like, this was for you. I thought you needed to give it a little touch.
Oh, that'd be so funny. I'm going to do that next time.
They wouldn't get it. And that would be the best part.
Yeah. Oh, I do have to ask though, like, cause like, I've met your advisor before, and how like just transitioning from being like undergrad in the lab to like now being a PhD student in the lab, like, do you feel like, obviously, like you have more responsibilities, like you have more experience under your belt, and you have like a little bit more creative like freedom with like what you want to do like with your research, but like, does it ever like hit you to be like, oh, like I'm not an undergrad anymore, like I'm actually like doing this?
Yes, always. And I mean I think even if I was at a different institution it would be the same thing, but I think like in a meeting last week I asked a question and my advisor was essentially like, well, you know, I don't have the answer to that, but that's kind of like, you know, you gotta just find the answer, like figure it out. That's part of, you know, now that you've essentially like leveled up, you gotta search for some of these answers. And I was like, oh crap, I have to answer my own questions. And it's like one of those things, like when like people said it was going to be hard and now I'm here and it's hard, like
I think back to like the clip of Alex Russo be like, so you telling me I have to come up with an answer all by myself to something caused all by myself?
Myself. Yes, pretty much. And then like, I think the excitement of answering questions that nobody knows the answer to and exploring different things through science. But that also means that I have to answer the questions that nobody has the answer to. So I can't just like Google the answer. It's a cyclical pattern of pain.
Very. But, you know, we're making it. And I mean, granted, I know the horrors persist, but so do we.
Yes. Yes. I want a tattoo of that.
And I don't know, like, I mean, granted, like we catch up every now and then, but like just seeing like keeping up with like your updates on social media, like you really like are putting in like the work. So like you really should be like proud of like all the hard work you're doing.
Thank you. I mean, I think anybody in this position to succeed, it really is a lot of work, but I think that's part of like, you've got to love what you do. And so sometimes it is fun. It doesn't just feel like work, and there is a balance between work and fun, but like, I don't know, the biggest thing of people who would ask you like, what made you know that you wanted to go to grad school specifically? For me, it was just that I was having fun, or I would like sit and be thinking about my research before I like, I'd lay in bed at night thinking about chromosomes and genetics, and you know, what a nerdy thing to admit. But when that happens enough, you start to like realize that maybe that's what you're supposed to do if you're that interested in it, that like make a career out of it.
Literally. And I want y'all to know, like, when we were at that dinner before interview started, like during the application cycle, we went and got food, and then we had like milk boba tea, and apparently I don't know what happened, but they caffeinated the crap out of this thing.
Oh my god.
And we were up to like 3, 4, 5 in the morning, knowing we had to be someplace dressed. Like,
I forgot about that.
At 6:30. And Camille was like, yeah, I couldn't sleep, so I just started reading science papers. And I was like, what the? I mean, like, I was too, but like, what are you doing, girl?
In true Virgo fashion, I really am like a Virgo deep in my bones. Yeah, I forgot about that. Like, we had no idea that, and like, looking back, I'm like, we're idiots. Milk tea, of course, has tea in it. And certain kinds of tea have caffeine, but in the moment, we were just like, this tastes so good. And we were drinking it at like 8 p.m. And then it was 3 a.m. and I had to be up at like 6. You had to be up at like 6. That was not good. And then we had the full day of interviews. Oh my gosh.
Like, I mean, yeah, but like, as like someone with ADD, like caffeine doesn't like usually hit me that hard.
Yes. No, that's the other thing. I agree. It doesn't.
So I was just like, yeah, like I can have like a tea. Like it's not going to be bad. Like it has milk in it. So like that's going to like put me to sleep like too. I don't know what happened like that. Like that was the humbling experience.
Maybe that's what like the next time that I need to stay awake all night for something, I'll just go back there and get that bubble tea again.
Yeah.
The milk tea, whatever it was. I got to try their full menu to find whatever crack was in that thing. Because that'll come in handy someday.
I think we got the same thing. So, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know, like, Audrey, like, they were up all night, too.
Yes. Well, because we all came back, and it was kind of like that Spider-Man meme where we're pointing at each other. We're like, did you sleep last night? Because I didn't sleep last night, and we're all just, like, asking each other how much we slept.
Yeah. So, add that on, we were nervous, because you're always nervous in that thing. Like, I never met someone who wasn't. We were nervous. We were sleep deprived. We were in full fucking glam at 6 a.m. in the morning, as Adele says. And then we were also getting asked questions about like
the about like what's the gap in the knowledge of the field.
Yeah. So like,
which I think is a really also like forward question, because a little bit, you know, that's one of the things that I've enjoyed about grad school is conceptualizing the different fields and like what. This is something that I've struggled with too, you know, thinking of a research question of what makes research valuable, or like what do we know and what's pushing science forward, like where are the gaps and why are they important? And that's something that you have to kind of like learn over time. And I feel like it's kind of ridiculous to expect people to have a really good understanding of that before you come into a program. That's something that I need somebody to teach me, right? Like,
yeah, no, agreed. Agreed. I feel like I'm grateful for my master's in some ways, because like granted I'd learned how to do science the wrong way several times. So
in a closet.
I know. I was like, I lived in this for 20 years. How dare you put me back in here?
No.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And I made a joke like that with Ryan in my interview, and I don't think he got it. Like,
I think he's a little old for that. He like sometimes I forget that he's not like a Gen Z-er, and
I can't wait till Gen Z's in the lab.
Oh, it will all pop off.
Yeah,
stickers everywhere.
I'm the only Gen Z student in my lab, grad student in my lab. Like the other two are millennials, and like they get it every now and then. But I was just like, I walked in one morning, and like being gay and Gen Z should like be studied. Also mentally ill, but like, you know, I feel like that should be studied.
Isn't that the same as just studying Gen Z? Mental illness in Gen Z is Gen Z.
Yeah. Well, also gay, but like that's another thing. So I walked in and be like, good morning, Divatrons. How are we doing? And like, no one was like, what the fuck are you saying?
Well, and then it's like, if you knew, it would be funny. And now that I have to explain it, it's like, even if you get it, it's less funny.
Yeah. I tell this all the time. I'd be so funny if everyone knew like my references. Like I would be a stand-up comedian funny.
I think that you don't even have, like people don't have to know the references. You just have to like carry them around in your pocket. Maybe like the associated meme or Vine or whatever, have like a small thumbnail of it in your pocket and pop it out and just give it to people. And then they can look at it and you give them no explanation other than that. Or like maybe a QR code to the video and like look it up.
No, I'm making a list of like slang and terms that I use for my advisor so she knows. I taught her like 8 left no crumbs, and like she left that on like any assignment that I did really well on. And I was just like, yes, my contribution.
That's amazing. Yes. She's going to be like reviewer number 2 on somebody's like manuscript for like for a journal. She's reviewing it and she just goes, "8 left no crumbs."
Yeah, no. What reviewer number 2 is positive ever?
Well, that's the lingo she's trying to pop out and use now, so she's got to use it somewhere.
Reviewer number two, you thought you ate. You weren't even at the table.
Well, don't teach her that one.
Oh, no. I'm not teaching her anything negative until I'm done.
Yeah, say only positive things.
Only positive things. Like, and I also recently have started, like, I have this scale of assigning everyone's personality to a cracker. Like, we were doing faculty interviews, and I was just like, ugh, they're such a saltine. And like,
what kind of cracker would you denote yourself?
Oh, I don't know. I'm everything.
I feel like I can only think of like three crackers right now.
Okay, so we got the, there's like the major categories, there's subcategories in all of them. But okay. So far, this is like an also ongoing editing list. There's saltines, there's Ritz, there's Wheat Thins, there's oyster crackers, there's Cheez-Its, there's Triscuits, and then there's also the whale crackers.
Oh, I didn't even consider whales. My instinct is to say that you're a Ritz cracker, but I also like, that's just vibes. I don't know what connotation goes with the Ritz cracker. It's kind of like calling somebody a water sign, but like you have no idea what a water sign is.
Yeah.
Like I feel like intuitively you're a Ritz cracker, but I don't know what that means.
Yeah, no, don't worry. Off camera, I'll break down the list.
Okay.
Off camera, you know what? I'll send you the list.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to have to start using it, or I'll just like have to start sending you people's names and then just their cracker, or just like send you the profile to like a certain scientist and then be like, whale cracker.
Yeah. You know what? I will. Have you seen that thing going around on academic Twitter? Be like, for $0, I will show up to like your grad students talk and tell them they did a great job.
No.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's a thing going around on academic Twitter right now. And be like, for $0, if you send me a picture of your advisor, I'll tell you what cracker vibes they give off and why. But I'm scared.
Please do that. Don't. I'm like, don't hesitate. Don't like, please do that.
I was so scared because, so like saltines, for example, like, they like, it's not bad. I want to stress, it's not bad. It's like a saltine is reliable. You know what's going to happen. It gets the job done. But like, it's not exciting. Like, the no one's like, ooh, saltine. Like, you know what I mean? They're like, you know, like stable. They're there.
Saltines have a time and a place. They're good with certain things. They are to the point.
Yeah, agreed. And then you have Triscuits, which these people are like a little rough around the edges, but the content and the material is there.
I don't know what I expected the Triscuit analysis to be, but rough around the edges is hilarious and amazing.
I know, right? Like, I'm waiting for like my TED Talk invitation.
I feel like you could also go with Triscuits because they have like all the little pieces and like the little layers that go into them. You could be like, they're like an onion and they've got layers and like okay. A Triscuit.
That's where like the everything crackers come in. Like,
okay.
So like, they, on the surface level, they seem flat, but like as you get to know them, like they're actually filled with all different types of things and like a lot of emotions all at the same time.
Okay, this is a loaded question, and I want an honest answer. I won't be offended by whatever you say, but what kind of cracker would you give me? Like, what would you say I am?
Ooh, I don't know. Okay, actually, I do know. I would give you...
That was the most dramatic cutoff.
The way... Those of you who aren't here... We just got kicked off the Zoom, like right as I was about to say that. And as someone who lives for a dramatic staple, make an entrance moment, you know, what can I say? Like the spotlight just finds me.
It's just, you were, I don't know. I would call you click. Like I was on the edge of my seat. My entire like being, this is like, all the BuzzFeed quizzes that I took as a middle schooler combined, like this is going to be my defining moment. And then it's like, this Zoom has ended.
Oh my gosh. It's like It was like when you there's your favorite show's coming, but you didn't know that it was a part one to a part two kind of thing. And you're like,
yes.
But no, I would give you a sun-dried tomato and basil wheat thin. And hear me out. Hear me out.
I'm just gears are turning. Sorry. Okay. I'm listening.
Because listen, I think wheat thins are overlooked. Like they have their reliability because you know what you're going to get with them. But at the same time, like they add depth and like a flavor that you don't necessarily expect. And with sun-dried tomato and basil, anyway, like a lot of people like love like to throw that around, think that they know what they're doing, know what they're talking about. And like, but like when you're asked to describe it, like they don't know like really what it is. But like when you like know, you know. And I just feel like you kind of get that vibe. Like you're reliable, yes, but you're also multidimensional. And you have this like kind of honesty that gets overlooked sometimes because people think they know what that is, but they don't really understand it.
That admittedly was like a way deeper explanation than I thought I was going to get. And you're just like repeatedly complimenting me and making me blush. But thank you. I do love wheat thins, especially the sun-dried tomato kind. So I'm just going to take my little compliments and run with them. I would have been, you could have like given me no explanation and I would have been like, yeah, I'm happy with that. I love sun-dried tomato wheat thins.
No, I love a long-winded explanation. I give receipts, proof, timeline.
Nobody can twist up your words because you were clear. And thank you. That was a really good explanation. And I kind of, well, when you said sun-dried tomatoes, I made that face because I was like, what sun-dried tomato cracker exists? And I had to think about it. Like, as you kept going, my brain was just moving so slow.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I love wheat thins. Like, wheat thins are my preferred cracker. But yeah, I love a list. I love a category. And, we had like 5 faculty interviews and my advisor was like, Jacob, what kind of cracker are this one? And I was just like, Triscuit. And then one was like the worst talk I've ever seen. I was like, half baked saltine.
It can get worse. There's like a step below.
Yeah, like I told you there's categories, girl. Like
I need to see these categories when we're done.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Imagine I told Catherine, who's like my advisor, and I was like, not to belittle anyone in science, but I just made the greatest scientific discovery of all time. And I told her it was like this list, and like she hasn't even seen it. She's like, and I love her because she encourages my madness. And I love
that. She rolls with it.
She rolls with it so much. And I can't tell her how grateful I am for it because then I'm worried she's going to stop. So I got to keep her like on the edge. And she goes, oh my gosh, yeah, like we have to get this published, obviously, like in Nature Science. Like,
yes.
And I was just like, this is the kind of energy I thrive in. And
because you know there are PIs out there that would be like, and you're spending your work hours doing this, but she's like, absolutely submit the manuscript yesterday.
If she has a million fans, I'm one of them. If she has one fan, it's me. If it's zero fans, I'm dead.
I love that.
Like I would go to war for Dr. Catherine Lennon. Like I love her so much. Like
what kind of cracker is she?
Ooh, can't say that on the show.
Okay.
can't say that on the show. She follows the Twitter of the show, so like I can't let her know. Again, I gotta keep them all in suspense. Okay. I made a rule I would not reveal the cracker personalities to anyone in my lab.
What about after your like dissertation defense, then will you reveal it, or is this like a never?
Oh yeah, dropping it like the second. That's how you keep them interested in your life.
That's how you persuade them to like let you do your dissertation when you're ready to leave. You're like, well, if you want to keep me an extra year, you're going to have to wait another year to find out what kind of cracker you are.
Yeah. No, there's a person in my lab, Brian. I absolutely, like, he's a PhD student in, well, PhD candidate, technically. I use those terms interchangeably. I know there's a difference, but, like, no one really knows what a PhD candidate is. It's easier to say.
Except the PhD candidates.
Yeah. But he said, you got to write this down. And I go, don't worry. Like, and there's this site that we use, like SharePoint, where they has like all these like different teams and stuff. And I was like, don't worry, it's going to be like team body size, male chop shop, and then it's going to be cracker personalities. But yeah, if you want to send me a picture of Ryan, and I will make and I will make a cracker profile for him.
I'll consider. Well, that's I think another thing is like your PI and the people you're in your lab with, like any job, like, and this is going to be like the most capitalist thing I've ever said, but like you become close with them, not like a family, but like you like,
oh, it's true.
You're with them so many hours of the day, and especially in the lab environment, you have so many overlapping interests and you care about the research that you're doing. And so I think it's like the lines of professionalism. I try to remember that like this is a job, and that like these people are like Ryan's my boss. And it feels weird to say that, but it is true.
Yeah. You know, tell me why I was like more salty he never followed me back on Twitter than I was to get rejected from his lab.
I feel like there's a like, I didn't realize that academic Twitter was a thing until I started going through the grad school application process, and people get straight up catty on Twitter.
I know, like there's some shade, and I live for that.
Did you remember, this was like 6 months ago, there was the tweet that went around of the one PI, I don't even remember her name, but she was like, I have all of these applications for students, and like this one has 3 publications and 2 awards, and like is coming with their own funding, and these aren't even in my top 10. And people were saying, like responding, because basically when she was applying to be a PhD student, she didn't have any publications or anything. And so she's basically holding people to higher standards than she was held to. And they were like, yeah, babe, pull that ladder up behind you. Like, damn.
And that's another thing that I don't think people talk about. Like, you could do like years of work and then not have any publications, because like it's not being accepted by any journals.
Yeah.
Or it only goes to predatory journals that like charge the shit out of you.
Or like there are PIs too that like they, you know, some PIs want the higher impact papers, and so maybe they're waiting for like that one last result, or they want you to do 4 experiments before you're doing one publication. It's not like you finish one experiment and then all of a sudden you have a publication. It sometimes you know, it takes years to get one, because also, you know, you could submit every single little thing, or you can hold all this data and hoard it until you have like a bigger paper. And I think that's one of the questions that, you know, like PIs deal with and like labs have to kind of balance, but publications are not a good, they're not a good measure of success. And I don't know, there aren't really any great measures of success. Like even citations, have you heard about the citation cartels?
No, what is that?
I love that they're called citation cartels. Basically, you should look it up. But I think it's mainly an issue in math, because it's such a small field that this can make such a big impact. But there are people in various countries that are from like smaller institutions in the math realm of academia that were basically like publishing to predatory journals where you like pay to publish type thing, and then just all citing each other repeatedly. And so they would like publish in a predatory journal, cite that paper from the predatory journal in another predatory journal, and then like, you know, like groups of people would just do this for each other. And so not only are you getting more publications out, but you're getting more citations. And then like these people who nobody had ever heard of their name before all of a sudden were making like the top 100 list for mathematicians being cited and like producing the most in research, because it was just like this group of people that were citing each other and publishing to predatory journals. But yeah, they're called citation cartels.
What the f-?
Yeah. I just heard about this like a week ago, and I have not stopped thinking about it, but I also just really love the name. I don't know why.
Okay, if you take away the predatory journal aspect, Loki, I'm a fan. Like Loki, if it's relevant, like to you, like the research that you're doing, and like you know, like your friend like has like a paper that like shows like XYZ, and like you can apply it to like your system via like ABC, like that I'd be okay with. But like, there are papers who will cite things. Like I was reading like a paper on like African cichlid behavior, and it was very little genetics work. I don't think any developmental work. And then there was like a paper cited where it was just like, I forget who it was by, but like the title was something along the lines of like developmental plasticity in like salamanders. I'm just like, this has nothing to do with like whatever like the system is doing. Like, what are you citing this for?
Or my favorite thing is when they add in a citation and it's like they just cite an entire book. And like, I don't know where in the book this information is. Like,
what book? The foreword, the conclusion, page one.
They're just like, here is the book. I got this information from this. Like, read through the whole thing to find out where this information is located. And I guess I just have to believe them because I'm not going to read the book.
Yeah. I mean, like, what book is it? Like, Speciation by like Orr and like in 2004.
Oh, yeah. I'm in the middle of reading that right now.
I'm reading that right now, too.
It's not a bad book, but also don't just cite the whole book.
Yeah, like I'm begging, like chapter, page number.
You say page number, paragraph, anything? Like,
I mean, in the first half, like second, like can I get a quarter? Like, so, and well, this is the same thing, like that I have a similar complaint with like R codes, like.
Yes.
Why I get not wanting to put your data out in a publication, but like what unless you're patenting like a R code, like an R program or like in a library in R, why would you not like publish in the supplemental methods like your R code?
Literally.
Like, as someone who is learning R right now, like I learned how to do a heat map today and I'm just like, ooh.
Ooh.
You can't tell me nothing. I will probably be very humbled like very quickly afterwards, but like for this like brief half a second, I'm like, R who? I'm the whole alphabet.
Literally, all of bioinformatics is hitting your head against a wall repeatedly trying to solve a problem. And I think that this is ADD friendly because of this. And then you solve a problem and you get the dopamine rush and the feeling of accomplishment. And then you tackle the next problem because you have that enthusiasm going forward. Until eventually you start hitting your head against the wall again, trying to solve it. And that's why I think that it's very like ADD, ADHD friendly, because the tasks are always just different enough to keep you entertained. Mm-hmm. And that the little dopamine hit that you get when you figure it out. Like I was trying to make a plot in R for the first time in undergrad and it took me 6 hours and I didn't even get the plot. I just got like the line, the like edge axes of the plot and like the data wasn't in it was bad, like, and we were 6 hours in at this point, but I was so excited to not just have a blank plot window. Nothing in the world could have stopped me in that moment.
Yeah. And then you find out that like the only reason why your code's not working is that you have an extra comma,
and then you go cry.
You go cry, and then you're like, and then you fix the comma, and then you had the whole thing working. Be like, I'm so smart.
Yeah, I knew it all along. I knew I could do it. I never had any doubts.
Yeah. How is like classes in grad school going though? Like in a way, you're like, oh, like I've done this before, and then you realize, be like, oh, I have not done this before.
Yes. Well, that was actually like, I really enjoy the classes that are more discussion and reading based because it's less. You know, the typical lecture format from undergrad, because part of that is like, yes, there's still things to learn, but a lot of it would be review at this point, but more so like, okay, let's read these papers that synthesize the field and start to think about, you know, what makes science good or why was this interesting? Or, you know, this paper from 20 years ago, if this was submitted for publication today, would you accept it? And why or why not? You know, like the bigger, more theoretical questions of what makes science good and why do we think about these things or why are they important is just a different level that I never really got in undergrad for sure.
Same. I really like it because it forces you to think about things in a different way. But like sometimes it feels like I feel like in a way, like it teaches you a skill to have that the classes are almost designed for you to already have, if that makes sense.
Yes. I think too, there's more room to expand upon what you actually like. There's a lot less of being taught things that you're like, I'm never going to use this in my life, because you are so much closer to the things you're actually interested in. Like, I don't know, this could actually be useful to me in a year or two, or like it's tangentially related to my research or what I want to do with my life. And, you know, like it feels like I'm gaining so much more with my time than I was in an organic chemistry class, which no offense to organic chemists, but like, that's not my jam.
Agreed. Camille, we're wrapping it up here, but I have a question to ask you that I'm asking all of my season two guests. If you could go back in time to like a younger version of yourself and give her like one piece of advice on your academic/professional career, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, that's such a good question. I would say to pay more attention to the people around you and the connections you're making, because even the small connections that may seem insignificant at the time or that you don't think are going to make a big impact on your life, like, will come back, and you'll be glad that you have those people in your corner, whether it's to, you know, ask them a question or to share your accomplishments or just see their accomplishments. Life is so much better when you have a support system around you.
Agreed. Or they'll ask you to come on their show and talk.
I mean, that too. But like, I mean, like, that's just it, right? Is that, you know, getting to know you and having those experiences, and like, I get so much joy personally out of like seeing you have a successful podcast and find things that you enjoy, and like all these people that I do care about, and just taking the time to get to know people, you know, that's so much more joy than I have in my life. Seeing other people succeed and feeling like I'm a part of their story than I would have had if I just stayed in my own little corner and, you know, not thinking about the larger significance, I guess.
Yeah. No, like that's so true. And like, it sounds so corny, but like just opening yourself up to those opportunities presents the opportunities. Like, it's like, I don't know a way to go about it. I know that's like the most like Disney Channel answer ever, but like, it's true. It really is. And like, I know for me, like, I was really like, and I keep going back to it. Like, I'm sorry. It's just like such a good example. I just really appreciated like when we were interviewing together, like we both, I could tell, had a nervousness to us, but like we wanted to like put ourselves out there. And like, I'm really grateful it is, because like, I really do consider you like a friend and a colleague. And I'm just like very grateful for that. And that happened.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely goes both ways. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, looking back, really, it feels weird to say that we were only together for like a day or two in person for that. But I really felt like I got to know you and a bunch of other people. And, you know, if you just take every day like that and consider everyone important and put your time and energy into them, I mean, that's, you know, why I would want to tell my younger self that, because it can make such a big difference. And you look around after an extended period of time of doing that, and you're just surrounded by all these wonderful people. And, you know, what more can you ask for?
Agreed. Well, Camille, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking with us. I had such a good time.
Me too. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming. And to all of you at home, just remember, life sucks, then you die. So have fun.
Damn. That earlier you were talking about like show-stopping like entrances. That was a show-stopping exit.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And have a good night, everyone. Bye.